Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 23 of the Two Spotty Muppets. That's right, we are back for a new year. That's back in 2023, and we begin with episode 23. Welcome back, my friend, to the microphone, Gray.
Thank you, Greg. Great to be talking to you, mate. We've had a little of a break over the summer. Hopefully yourself, mate, you had a great Christmas and New Year and little break, and all our listeners. Well, yeah, another year. And we did well to get 20-odd podcasts out last year, so we're really, you know, ready and raring to go this year.
Looking forward to the conversation again. And yes, I did have a good break. It was nice. Did some traveling overseas post-COVID, which was really nice to get back on an aeroplane and fly internationally again, I have to be honest. So yeah, had a good couple of weeks away, but really keen to bit of a dive in as our lighthearted dive into sport and have a bit of chat about what's been going on and what's currently happening and where we're heading this year.
For sure. And you went to the States, didn't you? And you caught a bit of NBA, I believe.
I did get to the States, and I got a couple of NBA games and one hockey, one NHL game as well. So got to visit the famous Madison Square Garden and got to see, went to Brooklyn to see the Nets play before they've been completely shaken up in the trade period in the last week.
Yes.
So
yes,
all the players I saw no longer play for Brooklyn. So that's interesting. And yeah, got to see the new Chase Center in San Francisco as well. Got to see the Warriors play.
Well, my summer, I did a little bit of traveling, but only domestically. But first ever trip to WA.
Very nice.
Had a fantastic time. The sporting sense, we got to see a Big Bash game at the Optus Stadium.
Very nice stadium, I hear too.
Wonderful stadium. And against the Thunder. And the Thunder won. Go figure.
Nice to see your local team, but in Perth, but you have an upset win. Seeing Perth actually end up winning the whole Big Bash, didn't they? I read the other day.
They did. As they're, what, about their fifth or sixth title?
Yeah, they've been pretty, well, I'm sure we'll get into that, but they've been very consistent since the Big Bash started, haven't they? They've been the form team.
Absolutely.
They're the benchmark, aren't they, seriously, for domestic 2020?
Yeah, benchmark, and they're very well supported.
Yep.
And, you know, they get good attendances. You know, very good, obviously. Yeah, been a one-team town, a good presence, you know, media-wise and that. And yep. They do a wonderful job, well organised. But I was thinking, Greg, jump right into it. Now, pretty rare that we get to start with basketball, your domain, hoops, but mate, a momentous week with LeBron James breaking the all-time scoring record.
It was a huge week in basketball, and as you said, LeBron broke with the 38-year-old record that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had held, and he was only, Wilt Chamberlain had it, then Kareem broke that and then has held that for just over 38 years, so nearly a 40-year record.
Incredible.
But yes, LeBron broke it this week against OKC. And it was really nice. It was a hometown. It was in LA, so he got to see it. He did it in front of his home crowd. And he, I think he needed, it was 36 going into the game and got it comfortably because he hit it at the end of the third quarter and crossed Kareem's record. And they, 10 seconds to go in the third quarter, they stopped the game, did the whole ceremony, and that lasted about 20 minutes, and then the game resumed with 10 seconds to go, which kind of bizarre. But in a little bit of a Australian connection, Josh Giddey, who's probably our best export at the moment, playing starting five, starting point guard for OKC, was actually on the court playing at the time, and that would have been phenomenal. They ended up winning the game as it was, but what a phenomenal experience for a young, probably our best up-and-coming prospect at the moment to be on the court while that happens, you know. Great basketball Australian story, actually.
It is, yeah, it's such a great moment. So, you know, against one of the greats, for him to just be on the court, that's incredible.
Absolutely,
something he'll remember forever
for sure. I said the other day, I think it depends what era you follow basketball. There's a very strong argument who is the GOAT now. Is it MJ, Michael Jordan, or is it going to be LeBron? And look, my heart still lies with MJ. I'll be honest. To me, MJ will always be the greatest. But there's a really good case for LeBron. You know, his longevity, his scoring, he's really up there with assists and rebounds as well. He does it all. He's phenomenal. He's a freak athlete. He's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, no, he's a unit, isn't he? Very well put together. I guess, Greg, with the GOAT debate, something we could look at later in more detail, but I don't know a lot about basketball, but I guess like any sport looking at the greatest of all time, do you just go on stats, but do you just go on titles, what they brought to the game, champions, best of all time, change the way the game's played in certain aspects?
Yeah,
there's a lot that sort of comes into it.
It's a really good question. Now, is it purely on the number of times? And look, MJ won six, but played his whole career, or mainly with Chicago. He finished out of retirement the last couple of years with the Washington Wizards, which he was part owner of at the time. Whereas LeBron's jumped around. He, you know, started with Cleveland, went on Miami and won a couple of championships, went back to Cleveland, won a championship, and now with LA. So he's bounced around a bit. And look, it's a professional sport. No dramas there. Where the dollars are is where you go. As I said, MJ played pretty much his whole career, apart from the last years, right at the end with Washington. You know, he was Chicago, he retired, went to baseball, came back to Chicago, retired, became a part owner, and then went to Washington. Look, I think a lot of purists, including myself, don't count the Washington years, and that's wrong. You need to look at those stats, but he was really right at the end of his career. He wasn't embarrassed by any stretch, but he wasn't a player, as you would expect, that age when he came out of retirement. Whereas LeBron, I said to you the other night, one of the things about LeBron, for his age and over his career, he hasn't sat out a lot of games. He's not overly injured player for the amount of games they play. He's been very resilient in the number of games he's been able to play each season. I think that's one of his strengths.
Very durable.
Very, very durable. I mean, I've heard a lot of journalists comment about the way he looks after his body. It's beyond any other athlete they've ever seen. It's quite a common theme when journos discuss LeBron, the way physically he's looked after himself and the priority he gives himself.
Yeah, and to do that, and it's good that it's a genuine accolade, the durability, because mostly it's an accolade that they give sportsmen who are pretty crap and got nothing else to say.
Yeah, you're right. You know, when there's no other stat to talk about, you talk about durability. But
i.e. the Tim Sheens football from his Penrith
Fair
days.
Point, yes.
A durable front rower. But no, it's a debate, yeah, that will go on for a long time. But well done, LeBron James.
Yeah, look, as I said, 38-year-old record, and I suspect it'll be at least another 38, 40 years before, if it and when it's broken again, it's going to be a good 38, 40 years. Because to break that, he's still playing, so it's not like the record's now. He's still going, and he's committed for at least next year. So he's over 38,000. It's going to be well over 40,000 points in a career. So, you know, someone's going to have to be very consistent and play a lot of matches over a very long career to even get close to it. So I think, like all records, it'll probably be broken at some point, but possibly not in my lifetime, given the fact it's probably going to be a good 35 to 40-year benchmark for players to try and get to.
Yeah, whoever does it, if it is broken, will be a hell of a
freak of an athlete, let's be honest.
Now, you missed a little bit of the Test cricket season, the summer season here in Australia.
Well, I was here for the first two matches against West Indies, which was in Perth and South in Adelaide. And then I did miss the next three against South Africa. And I did look at the, you know, online and check the scores. It didn't look enthralling, I'll be honest with you.
It was disappointing because South Africa, when they're strong, it's a really good contest between us and them. And their bowling attack was much sort of praised. And they were good. Like, I liked what I saw of them in the first test. But their batting was dismal.
Well, I know I was reading, appalling, really? And look, I only read what the journos said, but there was a lot of a positive comment about their bowling attack and the potential of their bowling attack. And I looked, you know, before I went away, I was sort of engaged in that. And clearly, so-called experts believe that that's where their strength was in their bowling attack. But yeah, as you said, there was a big gap between that and their batting.
Huge gap. So the actual results, just quickly. So in the Gabba test, the first test, Australia won by 6 wickets. Yeah, and South Africa scored, I think it was 79 in their second dig.
79 in a test series. That's, you
know. Okay, and they got some young batters, but they also got some experienced batters. You know, and the captain, Dean Elgar, he just had an awful, awful series. And the Boxing Day test was an absolute shellacking. Australia won by innings and 182 runs. And as is the norm these days, the third test was a draw due to rain.
It's getting a bit depressing, isn't it? The old, you know, it's the one you and I traditionally, you know, get to every year. But how often is it washed out? I know you gave me some stats about compared to some of even the tests in England, and Sydney's been rained out more often than some of those matches in England, which is a bit sad, actually.
One more day in Old Trafford. Old Trafford, where
just crazy. Where and I know, I don't know if it's on your list there, but I know there's a lot of talk just lately around moving that test. Adelaide's fighting very hard to get that test at the moment.
Yeah, Adelaide putting in a crack. Look, I don't think they're much chance, to be honest. The thing that happens, although the weather, but, you know, the next few years might be good weather. And
look, I don't think it'll happen either, just because basically of tradition in Australia, to be honest. And cricket, even here, is still a very tradition-based organisation and sport. So I don't think it'll happen. But I'll have to be honest, I think Adelaide's got a good case of argument, let's be honest.
I do. Did you hear our Premier's comments?
And I don't rate our Premier, and it was a bit of a low blow, I'll be honest, in my opinion. What do you say? 5 days of rain in Sydney is better than a test in Adelaide?
because at the end of the test, at the end of the if you get a proper test in Adelaide Oval, end of the day, you've been in Adelaide for 5 days. No, we're not going to start out the bait. We love our South Australian
and they do put on an awesome day night test every year and get and awesome crowds. And I'll give them credit for that. Their way they are supported by their members and general public in Adelaide is phenomenal. And that was really obvious this year. And I know when I was here, as I said, I saw the first two tests. Perth crowds were appalling in a beautiful stadium, and Adelaide still rocked up, even though the competition wasn't particularly strong. Adelaide still got really good crowds over the days the test was played.
Yeah, playing at night, I think, helps. When I was over there, we did a tour of the Optus Oval, and I asked one of the tour guides, and you know how they said they're going to play when we play South Africa, India, England, we'll be at Optus, and the rest will be Wacker. I think that idea has been shelved.
Why is that, do you think? Just because the whack is that bad now, or is it?
But it was still like 8,000 a day, which is probably all that good.
Wouldn't
they?
Yeah, 2/3 full whacker, 8,000 or 10,000 look much better than bloody 8,000 in a 60,000 seat stadium, because it looked bad on TV.
Yeah, no, you're right. And it definitely does and would. But the problem is, I think, Greg, is that it's all about, as always now, it's about the corporates.
Yeah, fair enough, too. What facilities they've got access to. And look, they're paying the dollars, so I get it. I totally get it.
I think that's where it's heading. But yeah, so the Wacker, you could do it. The tours weren't available when we were over there. But the Wacker, look, for people of our generation and older, you know, it still holds a place in our heart.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like, just going past it, because they're very close, just across the river, and just seeing the old ground. You know, for me, the amount of times as a kid coming home from school to watch the Wacker test, you know, all the, you know, and the Ian Chappell, of course, or you can leave the ball on length at the Wacker, raving on about that as soon as someone left the ball, and all the great stuff. I just remember, you know, Lily and all the rest of it. Time moves on and sport is a business. And
look, the stadium wasn't up to scratch in terms of facilities, and I appreciate that. And they've built the beautiful, fantastic new stadium across the river. So why not use it? But it's just a bit sad when, you know, it's a 60,000 seat stadium and you've got 8,000 to 10,000 people sitting there. It doesn't look great on TV.
No, it looks terrible on TV. Look, something that is interesting, though, well, something that's good, it's exactly the same soil. Like, it's from the same square that they use at Optus Oval. But the thing that has changed, and it was so crucial to the Wacker, was the influence of the Fremantle Doctor, the sea breeze.
The wind coming in, that sea breeze coming in of an afternoon.
Yeah, and bowling into the Fremantle Doctor was a real skill that, you know, only a few perfected. You know, your Terry Ordermans, Bob Massey, people of that ilk.
Is that because of the shape of the new stadium? It doesn't allow the wind to enter?
No, the wind doesn't. It does. You do get some breeze, but like those bigger stadiums, it just swirls around.
It swirls around, yeah. Fair enough, yeah.
Like, it's not open. You know what I mean? It's a closed stadium, like new stadium. Whereas obviously the Wacker was just
had grandstands and opening gaps between the stands, etc. Yep.
Just coming its natural, you know, sort of direction that it was traveling. So yeah, unfortunately that's lost a bit. But once again, as I said before, the business talks. As I said, it was really disappointing. Like Dean Elgar was the captain, and he was like playing his first test, just hanging the bat out, you know, to dry and stuff. Like, it was really disappointing. But just on cricket, one thing that probably wasn't good, because it wasn't close, didn't give our blokes the sort of competition they probably needed heading over to India.
Two very one-sided series, two short one-sided series, a two-game series and a three-game series. But they've got a huge series now, which we'll get onto, but just started in India, which is, you know, Australia, India and England are obviously the three dominant countries in Test cricket at the moment. And to try and compete against India, particularly in India, you want a really good build-up to it. And they didn't get that over the summer at all, from what I've gathered.
Not much of a build-up at all, no. Definitely not disappointing for South Africa. Yeah, you mentioned the tour of India. Before we do, I will say on Test cricket, and we'll have a quick look at the Big Bash. Yeah, so Australia were bowled out in the first test yesterday in India for 177. India now about 6 for 270 odd, so over 100 or about 100 in front. Yeah, so we batted first, bit disappointing. A lot of changes, very interesting changes. So Travis Head was dropped for Renshaw.
Do you know we chatted the other day about, which is bizarre because he had such a strong test series in Australia. He was probably the pick of the batsman overall, to be honest. He's the one that got dropped.
Funny, wasn't it? Yeah, interesting. But also Renshaw came in.
Who hasn't been around bloody for years.
No, look, I've rated him. I thought he deserved another chance because he's played really well.
Not saying he's not a bad player. He got wrapped up in that ball tampering issue in South Africa and sort of faded into oblivion. I'm glad he's getting another chance. I'm just not sure about the timing of it.
Yeah, I've been quite impressed with him. But to drop Head, though, who was far above both of them. Now, bowling, some force changes. Hazelwood out injured, so Boland came in. And Stark's not due to play till the next test because of his finger injury. And Green was also out. So they've debuted Todd Murphy, off-spinner. So they've played two off-spinners, which I just thought was a bit funny. You would have thought Swepson or Agar who spun the ball the other way. But proof's in the pudding, and I just noticed Murphy's just taken his fifth wicket on debut.
Oh, good. Five on debut. Well, credit to him. Kudos in the subcontinent.
Taking a Michelle Pfeiffer on his debut.
That's great. Yeah.
So that's a pretty good effort. So, and Lyons got another wicket, so the off-spin seems to be doing the job. And Labuschagne's bowling some overs as well. So,
oh, that's a bit of leg spin then.
So a bit of leg spin. Yeah, it's going to be – look, it's really hard work over there. It's real test cricket. It's an absolute scrap. India 249 for seven. So they're not 100 ahead yet.
Which is – yeah, it makes it competitive and only a couple of weeks – like 3 weeks to go and it'll be a change of innings. So they're not out of it.
No. I just find it intriguing viewing. The fact is runs are hard to come by. You've got to work hard for your wickets. It's test cricket. You know, what test cricket is meant to be. And so it's a four test series and they're pretty close together. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it pans out because I think there will be some rotation, you know, depending on the wicket and the stadiums they play at, those sorts of things. So, yeah, no, looking forward to watching the series.
Yeah, it should be exciting test cricket. I mean, I'd say exciting in inverted commas, because exciting test cricket doesn't mean it's bash and thrash, but, you know, that really close grind.
Indeed. Now, other international, look, our women, how good, they're just too good.
They are a freakishly good team. Let's be honest.
Played Pakistan. Pakistan came out here for a couple of one dayers in 20, and we just smashed them. It was like, well, dare say, women against girls.
No, they are, I know they're currently in South Africa at the T20 World Cup. Women's World Cup, or I think they're doing warm-up matches at the moment. I'm not quite started yet, I think. No, they'd have to go as pretty strong favourites.
I think so, yeah. But well done, man. It's shaping up really well. But the Big Bash, now, I know you're not the hugest T20 fan, Greg, but the Big Bash had a real resurgence this year. The ratings were up. The ratings were very high. Some good crowds. I think two things that sort of contributed were the test, although they only came late, but the test play has been available towards the end of it. And also the games, there were so many really close, tight games. It was actually, you know, quite exciting. I know Cricket Australia but the whole cricket fraternity and Channel 7, Foxtel, were very, very happy with the result of how it went. But they have scheduled a reduction in the number of games when the next contract comes around.
I think summer's there to be taken if one of the sports can get it right. You've basically got, apart from international cricket, you've got the Big Bash, you've got A-League soccer, and you've got the NBL basketball. They're the big ones in terms of men's sport. And I don't think anyone's really clinched it yet. And I think it's there to be taken. And I do love the basketball, but love my cricket as well. I hope the Big Bash does get it right. And it's good to see you said there was more interest in it again this year. I have to be honest with you, mate. I didn't see one game. I mean, I missed most of the season because I was away, but I didn't watch a game.
I was impressed. I was a bit like you, a bit cynical. You know, it's sort of like a 50-50 game with the 30 overs of spreading the field taken out. But no, it was good. It was good. Most games, not all, but most games were good to watch.
Do you think that's one of the reasons it was a success? And we chatted about this the other day too. There was really not international short form competition of cricket this year. So Australia didn't play really 50 over cricket after the test matches or 2020 cricket. So it really Big Bash filled that void.
Maybe, apart from the T20 World Cup.
But that was before the test matches.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yep.
Normally we'd have our test series and that would be followed by, you know, in the old days, a triangular one day series, but more recently, you know, another country would come in, you'd have 5 one-dayers or 2 lots of 5 one-dayers plus some 2020s. There was no, after the test series, yes, we had the World Cup before, but after there was no 50-over cricket, no 2020 international cricket. So the Big Bash really filled that void. I don't know. I'm just wondering.
They did have a couple of 2020s and one-dayers, I think.
Who against? Who did they play?
I couldn't even tell you, Greg. That's how bad it was.
Yeah, no. And look, you know how I feel about that sort of, particularly the 50-over stuff these days.
Yeah, but I think the reduction in games will be great. what else too? It still happened. Don't get me wrong, but there wasn't as many. This bloke's played five games and now he's off. It did happen, like the South African bloke Duplessis and that, but it didn't seem to happen quite as much. So all the good our domestic players. But I was thinking the other day, Greg, when you think about it, before the Big Bash came along, apart from the Test matches, the only cricket, international cricket you had to, or cricket you had to watch was the one dayers. And there was quite a few of them, but you know, still only 10, 15 games. Whereas now you're getting pretty good crowds for domestic cricket, not international. End of the day, it's domestic cricket. And you know, compare how much more people are, the crowds, and how much more money that would generate than when all they had was the international one dayers, really.
No, fair point. Because apart from that, there was the Sheffield Shield four-day matches, and then there was the domestic 50-over cricket, but hardly anyone went to that.
No, but it must be said more people went to that than went to the Sheffield Shield. Or do go, yeah, which is an elite competition, long four games, first club level, just not attended by many.
No, it was an interesting summer of cricket all around. But I agree with you. I think shortening the Big Bash a little bit is probably a good call.
Yeah, 10 games, I think, when it does come in. I think that's perfect. And you're right about getting it right, Greg. I just think very close, just before Christmas, you start it and you finish it around Australia Day, around that time. When school goes back.
Which is about when, I was going to say, for most states, it's about when school holidays end. So you fit it right in that school holiday break. Families are together, kids are off, more inclined to go as a family of a night. You know, the vast majority of the games are evening matches, so families can go. I think that's a really good scenario.
Moving forwards, yeah. So the Big Bash itself, it was interesting at the end. So Perth and Sydney, who were the front runners the whole time, and they looked like being in the final. But it often happens in the Brisbane Heat, who had a shocking start, and people were saying it's the same old Heat. But then they won, it was eight or nine in a row, got on a roll. And in the semi against Sydney at the SCG, Sydney just had a shocker, and the Heat rolled them, They only chasing 120-odd and only just got there. But the Heat made the final. And most people thought, okay, over in Perth, it's going to be a bit of a whitewash. And they very, very nearly won. Probably should have won the Heat. Was it 175-odd? Batting first in the final, that's a good score. Probably blew it a little bit. Probably could have made a little bit more. And about three overs to go, they were in the box seat. I think Scorchers still needed 30-odd for... a fair few runs, and just experience got them over the line, more or less, and some inexperience on the Heat. So, on paper, you think, of course, the Scorchers would have won, but it doesn't quite sort of belie the fact that the Heat very nearly pulled it off.
Yeah, and they have been a bit, not the best performing team over the previous season. So to come good, they obviously, worked it out to get, what'd you say, 8 or 9 wins on a run there to get to the semis.
Certainly an improvement for them. From our perspective, like I said, the Sixers were having an excellent season until when it mattered.
Did I hear or read that Steve Smith played a lot of their games at one period there and performed really well?
He did. Well, he made first, was he the first person? Or first person in 10 years to make back-to-back centuries.
Oh, really?
And then he made 70-odd in an absolute swashbuckling innings. Sixers galore. And got them back. Look, unfortunately, Warner and Labuschagne didn't perform. Although people were excited to see them back, which is a little bit disappointing. But, Smith particularly, he set it alight. He really did and got the interest. Yeah, unfortunately for the Sixers, this didn't happen when they needed to. Sydney Thunder were pedestrian, again, definition of mediocrity. And a few others, I think the Hurricanes were highly regarded and they didn't do a lot either. But the good thing about it, as I said, it's short program, get it done, entertaining. And look, like it a lump, but then it's forgotten.
Yep. No, and that's the way it should be, short, sharp, exciting while it's on, but get over fairly quickly. And I think, as you said, shortening to that Australia Day period, getting over and done with by then, that timing will work really well.
Yeah, less is more sometimes.
Yes, I think sometimes less is more.
Right, Greg, the other big thing of the summer always is the Australian Open.
Yes, the tennis.
Australian Open tennis. The women's, I think it had a lot more interesting matches than the men's. The women's was won by Sabalenka. I think she's Russian or, neutral at the moment. Defeated Rybakina, who the Wimbledon, Russian, but represents...
Kazakhstan, yes.
Kazakhstan, sorry. Yes. So, and that was a pretty good match. It was a three-setter. The men's was just a snore fest.
How long have I been saying men's tennis now? And it's really sad because I grew up playing tennis, like my tennis, It's a snore fest. It's boring to watch.
Boring, but also, okay, Djokovic, like him or love him, like, you know, he's elite level. And when young Dominguez made through to the quarters, was it?
Yes, quarters, I think. Yeah.
Last 16, we thought, right, give him a challenge. He just wiped the floor with young Alex.
Steamroll, I actually watched that match. I was home for that. I saw that, and he steamrolled him. It was not even a competition. Like, it wasn't even close.
And it wasn't that some of these blokes were playing really poorly. Djokovic is just too good.
He's just too good.
And it was just very boring. Like, you know, the Tsitsipas, shit his pants, whatever you prefer. I wouldn't say he did that, but yeah, he's best. He's probably, of the ones who are left, he was probably the next best player. And daylight, absolutely daylight between them.
Yeah. Djokovic rolled him in three sets in the final.
Yeah, did it fairly easy. Probably the most exciting thing for a lot of viewers they found was the men's doubles.
Oh, the young Australian guys.
Well, we had our two Australian guys who never played before. They never played together before. They were making it up on the run, basically, they said, and they won the doubles final conventionally. So that was good, and that was after the special K's the year before. And the women's doubles was run by, I haven't got their names, but the Russian duo who defeat the two Japanese players. So, look, as always, I love to know how they do their figures, because every year they say record crowds with the Aussie Open tennis. Yeah, I always take that with a grain of salt. But, look, as always, successful. The tennis buffs love it. Yeah, I just thought, yeah. We're in that sort of interim where Djokovic still has a few years to go at the top, and the other players haven't caught up yet.
Caught up, you know, Roger's retired, obviously. Nadal is getting close to it and not at that level anymore. And I love Nadal. I think he's a freak athlete. And just as likely still French Open, mind you, this year, let's be honest. But on the other surfaces, he's just that half step slower now at his age. And as you said, Djokovic, when there was the top three, and if you count Murray for a little while, there was the top four. He's a bit younger and he's on his own now. And the others, there's no one really caught up. Who's that young guy that won the US Open that withdrew from the Australian Open at the last minute? The Spaniard?
Yes, I know who you mean. I can't think of his name. Yeah, the Spaniard.
He's supposed to be the next big up-and-comer. And he unfortunately withdrew from the Australian Open at the last minute with injury. So there are a couple.
Yeah, because he's a current. He was the world. Number one.
There are a couple of players floating around to challenge Djokovic, but I think right now he's probably on his own.
Yeah, which doesn't make it as exciting. I agree with you. Nadal still probably will win the French Open. If he does, it'll be a challenge. I don't think it'll be his hardest one that he's won for a long time if he does.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I think he will retire if he does.
If he does or doesn't.
Does.
You might reckon he'll call it a day after that.
He might call it a day anyway.
I think he'll go to France. I think he'll play in Paris to see how he goes. But depending on that, it may be the end.
Yeah. And what is hampering Rafa is the injuries.
Yes. Yeah.
And just caught up with him. And as you said, Greg, although they're still elite at that level, just that half a second off the pace is all you need.
And it happened to Roger at the end of his career, who I know he hasn't won the most. I'll go back to our GOAT conversation. I consider Roger the best. But, you know, at the back end of his career, the age, he just became that little half a second slower, quarter of a second slower, and that's all it took.
Yeah, it's all it takes from going from number one to number 100. That's the nature of professional sports. Yeah, so, but well, under the winners of the Aussie Open, well, the Joker, he'll be back next year, that is for sure. Now, something else, Greg, that people, is it really a sport? I don't know. But Sydney the Hobart, I written in my note, who cares? But no, we don't. But anyway, line honours were Comanche and a handicap, which I guess is the real, you know. I'm not sure. I've got no idea how they work out handicap.
Now, is it?
It's obviously on the size of the boat and the
size of the boat, weight, all those sort of crew. I guess all that comes into it. There obviously be a way of working it out. But
yeah, celestial was the handicap. But yeah, but line honours. Look, one thing I will say, a lot of people love it. It's something that, you know, to build up the Christmas, the start of the Sydney the Hobart. Huge money. It's yachting. Anyone involving yachting, it's not for the it's certainly not for the battler.
No, it's a unique inverted commas sport. No, that's not fair. You'd have to be fit to sail those bits in the conditions they sail in. But it's not for your everyday. It's not for your everyday person. Let's be honest.
It's competition. No. Look, yeah, and seriously, it is a sport. I guess sport is anything where there's, you know, you're playing a game and there's competition, proper competition. So it certainly is that. And I guess there's not many other sports that you do and, you know, you can potentially lose your life doing it.
No, that's right.
Which, which does happen, which has happened, unfortunately.
Has happened. Yes, it has happened.
Yeah, but what? So well done. Well done to the winners there. Right, Greg. So as always, the NRL, the football codes aren't that far away.
I was going to say, we're nearly launching. I mean, I think trial games start this weekend. I saw on Foxtel there's something being advertised, one of the trial games.
Yes, the trial games have been televised. The Tigers and Warriors played last night.
How did they go? How did your boys go?
Getting a good run, which is the purpose of a trial, Greg. We went, okay. On the scoreboard,
we
got absolutely
flat. Okay. So I'm interpreting that like they got on the field, they actually played the game, but the result didn't go your way. Now, I can't mock you too much because I'm pretty convinced my team, the Dragons, will be wooden spoon or very close to it this year.
But look, they're certainly looking not strong, Greg, but it's amazing how seldom that happens. It's the team that's often, you know, thwarted as this, they're going to be the spooners. You just never know. It all comes down to injuries and...
Well, the off-season hasn't treated them well with injuries and players. It hasn't gone well, and their coaches under the microscope, let's be honest, before the season's even started. So I'm not holding much hope for my Dragons this year, to be honest with you.
No. And also their fullback getting some illness that you can't play for at least the year.
Can't play for a whole year, if ever again.
If ever. So that's Cody Ramsey, that's thoughts with him. Because he looked all right. I didn't mind the look of him.
No, I think he had a lot of potential. He had a long way to go, but I think there was a player there ready to go. I agree with you.
So, yeah, hopefully he, you know, whatever it is, does get over it and gets back on the park again.
Poor bugger's been wiped out for the whole year.
Yeah, but you're right. A few off-season things and a rest or two.
Now the court case for the Dragons coming up with some bloody assault off the field with a player and father or something.
Yeah, on a roof or something.
Yeah, some building contractor where the car was parked or something ridiculous like that. It was over.
You know, something very serious.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. On paper, I'll be honest, Greg, I haven't really followed it.
Okay.
Because it's been on the social media and that, reviewing each team each day, and I haven't really looked too much. But I don't know. The Dolphins are going to have to play well not to get the spoon too.
You reckon? They're my sneaky.
You think so?
I think Wayne Bennett is a freak of a coach, and he'll get players to play for him above their level and has done for, I mean, apart from his little stint at Newcastle, which went pear-shaped, but I think that had a lot to do with behind the scenes, not on the field. I just think his record of having players perform better than they really should because they play for him, and I don't think they'll win it, but I don't think they'll come last. I think they'll be more competitive than what people expect is what I'm trying to say.
Mm. Well, according to Nathan Brown, that was, what was going on below the belt rather than above it.
Yes, yes.
It was his time at Newcastle, shall we say. I agree with what you say, Greg, and with Bennett's credentials. What it comes down to, though, so much in footy is depth.
Yes.
And the Dolphins squad, first 17 is not that bad, but I just worry when the injuries start, who's going to step up. But hey, it's so competitive these days, who really knows? Two teams under the most pressure, probably, of three, I think. Parramatta,
yep.
Can they go that next step? The Bulldogs, all their purchasing, and the Tigers.
Look, I think Bulldogs will be okay. I think they're going to be, as much as I want to see your boys improve, I think the Bulldogs will be the biggest improvers. I think they've picked...
And they should
I think they've spent a lot of money, but they've more importantly, they've got themselves, I think, who's going to be a really good coach.
Yeah, I agree. And we spoke about that in the pod late last year.
Yeah, I think he's going to turn out to be the next best thing in coaching.
I just like his body language. Yeah, I agree with that. And you want to be with the amount of interest that's been in him and the amount they've paid for him.
100%.
And also Tigers, we've recruited quite well.
I was going to say, you guys have spent a bit of money too, let's be honest.
Whether, it doesn't always translate to on the field success, but look, they're looking, let's just say we're looking better than we have for quite a while.
I don't think you'll be wooden spooners this year. I genuinely think, I think the Dragons will be there. I really do. I just can't see them getting off the bottom.
You're right. I think it is going to be a pretty, pretty tough year for them.
And in terms of the other end, I think you're going to come down to your standards, your Roosters, your Bunnies, Melbourne. I think they're all going to be there or thereabouts.
As always. Look, Parramatta will still be thereabouts.
I think so. They'll be, I'm not sure they'll win it, but they'll be there or thereabouts again.
And Penrith, you'll be a brave man to bet against them, to not going the triple crown.
Three-peat's very hard in any sport. So, yeah, they're going to have to perform well, but they've lost a couple, but not many players. There's core still there.
Their core's still there. Their forward pack's still good. Really good inside and outside backs. They've got the makings there of pushing for a premiership for the next 5 years.
The other sneaky I've got that will be, I think, personally, is Cronulla.
Yep, no, I, I think you're right there, Greg. Like, well, they had a good year last
year.
They
did.
Regardless. And Nico Hines, if he stays fit, he's a champion player. And they've got some really good kids too.
That's what I'm thinking. They've just put a really young, good team together. And I just think they're not getting the headlines, which is a good thing, as some of the other teams often get. And I just think that'll do them a favour.
And another team that's well coached.
Yes, again, a very well coached team. I agree with you.
And it'll be interesting to see how the Cowboys go. Whether last year's unexpected, very good season was a bit of luck involved, or whether it's consistent, whether they can be consistent and be up the top again. Orders well for bring it on, I say. Get through the trials. I don't hate the trials, but it's sort of like
all sports, trials you can't make any judgments from because it's not real. It's not real football or, you know, any sport that has those warm-up or trial matches, pre-season games, whatever you want to call them, it's not real.
Yeah, they're a necessary evil, aren't they? Just to get the match.
Necessary. I'm not saying they're not, you can't do them, but you can't judge the results as any indicator of what the season's going to bring.
Yeah, well, with the NRL ones, particularly, you know, when your own team plays, all I look at is if the paper, wherever you're looking at, says who played. And the most important thing is all I look at. I don't look at the score. I just look at the injuries.
Yep.
And cross your fingers that you don't have any major injuries.
Yeah, that's the worst, is when someone comes out, and it happens every year, but one of your better players or one of the better players ends up with a major injury from a trial game. That's the worst.
I guess that's football, isn't it?
That's right.
That's any sport.
Yeah, it's any sport.
Any game you play. Yeah, so it's about three or four weeks away to start of the NRL. Now, something I remember late last year, Greg, we had a quick chat about the Wallabies coaching.
Yes.
And we mentioned how would they consider Eddie Jones or anyone else, and we both agreed it was too late in the day, the World Cup coming up later this year. It was too late for him to do it, and consequently, he's gone. David Rennie gone, Eddie Jones in.
Yeah, I think we said, look, yeah, probably won't change the coach, but bring Eddie Jones in as an advisor or some, you know, position within Rugby Australia. But, of course, we put...
So we're half right.
We put the mocker on that and Jones got the gig.
Yeah, we're half right. We got a half right. So anyway, look, the pressure will be on Eddie. Look, they need to do something. I guess you could argue. I really did think it was too late. You know, they could get through this World Cup and then rebuild after that. But they've gone, well, you know, they've gone for Eddie. He's done it before. It is interesting, isn't it? A coach that's already been sacked from that job.
Yep. And then had huge success in England, but then got sacked there as well. So he's been sacked twice, but then became really sought after by Australia again. So I worked that out.
Yeah, the English one was funny because such a good record. And the record he had after that wasn't even that bad.
No.
And they just pulled the trigger. Yeah. So
I don't know what really was going on behind the scenes to make that happen. But
look, something that's impressing me, and I am being sarcastic, is now, and with Michael Chika being involved in rugby league, talk of they're going to go after some league players. And you know what I think of that? It annoys me, all the carry on that gets spoken about, the NRL players. We can't afford to let them go and all that rubbish. So I guess there'll be a couple of years of that coming up.
Yeah, you know what? If someone gets offered some money, fill their boots, I say, and go for it. I don't really care.
No, I don't. But unfortunately, the idiots in the media do.
Oh, I know. It fills up newspapers and websites.
And you get the likes of Maddie. Like, I don't mind Maddie Johns, but we open the war chest. We've got to do whatever to keep them in the game.
No, we don't.
No, we don't.
No, I agree with you. We don't. I'm totally on your side with that. We don't, you know.
Off you go, and you'll be back.
Yep.
And I'm sure the proof will be in the pudding there.
Yep.
Now, Greg, that's what I've got written down. But also, of course, the greatest show on turf awaits on Monday.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a little chat about that. The biggest sporting event in the world, globally, apart from, you know, individual game.
And then you can give us a brief NBA. I know we talked about LeBron, but
yeah, been a bit of a circus this week, but I'll fill that in.
NBA, and yeah, and that will probably do us. I know we will be talk some EPL in the upcoming weeks. But yeah, so look, I know you're sort of new to NFL, but it's been a really...
I am new. I loved it, but I am new, I'll be honest.
I found it a really good season. Just a quick review. So, you know, the playoffs came around, fancy teams, Philadelphia, you know, were way on top in the NFC,
mm-hmm.
the National Conference. And we had the Bills had a really good season, Kansas City Chiefs, my team, the Cincinnati Bengals, some of the front runners in the AFC. San Francisco were in the NFC with the Philadelphia Eagles. So when it came down to final, unfortunately, the first games were won, pretty much went with the flow. But then we had the Bills. The Bills went down to my team, the Bengals, in the snow. It was quite bizarre. Everything was in the Bills' favor. It was in Buffalo, and it was snow. It snowed the whole game, you know, and they're used to that. You know, Josh Allen being one of the premier quarterbacks, although Joe Burrow caught QB for the Bengals, they were totally outplayed. The Bills, they saved their worst game for the most important game.
How often does that happen to teams? Like, that's not like that happens
to teams, and also happens to the Bills quite regularly. But I was mentioning, you know, to my mate who's a fan, I said, it's perplexing to have such a good year. Okay, there's high expectations, a full crowd, and they dished up that. They'll never at the races. Like they said, they were out-infused, outplayed, out everything. But look, it set up a really good game. The championship game for the AFC was my mob, the Bengals, versus the Kansas City Chiefs with Mr. Mahomes.
That was a good game because we were texting during that game. That was a bloody good game, actually, in the end.
It was a good game. And, of course, Mahomes had picked up an injury the week before. There was doubt whether he would play, although it was obvious he was always going to play. And he did, and he played really well. Look, the Bengals played well in patches, but not as consistent. And when it really mattered, Mahomes just stepped up. Look, Joe Burrow had a great game. Some of the receivers for the Bengals were a bit quiet. Ja'Marr Chase, I thought, was a bit quiet. But for Joe Burrow, he's really good, but the Bengals brought some offensive. You know, tried to strengthen up the offensive line to protect him. Got some injuries near the end, so half of them were out. So, yeah, it's something they need to do to give him the protection he needs. You know, because he looks like he is elite. But Patrick Mahomes is, we're talking about Djokovic. I think Patrick Mahomes is just a step above anyone else. And in the Super Bowl, just on the other side, it was San Francisco and the Eagles. And San Francisco's up-and-coming, or the replacement quarterback who's been in for a while, Purdy, had a great run, about 8 games or something, on a winning roll, and he got injured early and went off. And so Philly won quite easily. So some people are saying we still don't really know, because San Fran weren't at full strength for most of that game, if they're the real deal or not.
Yeah.
But they certainly look like it. So in all, it's going to be an excellent match. And from an Australian perspective, we have definitely one, Jordan Malatha.
Yep.
The former Bankstown boy, South Sydney Junior Rugby League player, who's playing as the left tackle, I think he is, one of the most important positions on the park, protecting his quarterback, the blind side of his quarterback. And look, in their kicker, I've forgotten his name, but he's been their kicker for a few years, but unfortunately got injured a few months ago and hasn't played since. But he's saying,
how do you get injured being a kicker? Just saying.
I guess repetition.
Yeah.
Because what do you do when they train? They're just kicking all the time.
I mean, they're pretty protected, the kickers. They're very specialist position.
Yeah. I dare say nearly all injuries, with a lot of them would be quadricep or hamstrings. Yeah,
fair enough.
I would think. Yeah, but he's available. So, that's a risk.
It'll be an interesting decision that they make, whether to stick with what's been working or go back to their regular.
Mm, yes, it will be. And, one of those two kickers is going to be probably disappointed for that sport. So from a strange perspective, there's that. Yeah, and as always, it's just a huge event. And, I'm really looking forward to having a look at it.
Yeah, looking forward to it as well. I said not as into it. Enjoyed this year, but certainly not where you are in fandom yet, but do enjoy it. And looking forward to Monday as well. Monday our time.
Yeah, should be great.
Good timing for us, right? Mondays.
Oh, it's great. Oh, it is. Monday, then 10 o'clock, very friendly time, 10 a.m. The NBA, as you said, Greg, bit of a circus, mate.
Oh, so basically the NBA, for those who don't follow it, a season's 82 games. We're pretty much in the middle of the season right now. And they have a trade window. So up until a certain date, teams can trade players. After that date, till the end of the season, you can't trade a player. So the trade window ended this morning, our time, Thursday in America, and there has been a massive amount of trades and quite significant ones. So the Brooklyn Nets have basically been disbanded. Kyrie Irving's been traded to Dallas Mavericks, and Kevin Durant got traded right at the last minute to the Phoenix Suns. So I was listening to a podcast earlier today, an American East Penn one, and they, the quote was the end of the greatest theoretical team. And I think that's right, because at one point they had James Harden, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving all on the Nets. And I think they played all of 18 games together during that time.
So what's the main reason behind it, Greg? Like they just don't feel they're getting value for money out of them?
Look, it's two ways. Sometimes, like in Kyrie Irving's case, he requested a trade. He said, I've had enough of this. I've had a gutful. It's not working for me. You know, you're not offering what I want. I want to be traded. So, and I think, his stance on the vaccination and he's in and out and some of his off-court dramas, they said, we've had enough of you as well. And he was traded fairly quickly.
mutual
Durant,
agreement.
Durant, on the other hand, was like, you know what, it's not working for me now. He's still high quality player. So the Nets think, well, if I get, we move him now, we'll get a lot back and help for a rebuild. So it can go both ways. So sometimes it's, you know, it's not working for the club, they move, or the player can request a trade.
Yeah. The rebuild thing, though, it's sort of, I find it bizarre when you put a really good team together, but you win nothing.
Yes.
And then you're going to have to rebuild again.
Yeah. Yeah, so the Nets have won nothing. And that's in that time that they've had, you know, the big three or the big two, they've won nothing. It's been a total disaster. So anyway, that's all disbanded now. And as I said, the Suns, what it has done is changed the West, because the way basketball is structured, there's an East Coast Conference and a West Coast Conference. That's how it's divided up. And this year, or the last couple of years, East has been much stronger. Well, now that Kyrie's gone to Dallas, which is in the West, and Kevin Durant's gone to Phoenix, which is also in the West, it's made now the West really strong, and probably stronger than the East. Overnight, the West has become stronger. So it's kind of bizarre. The other team that made a lot of moves was the Lakers. And, you know, it's been coming for a long time, but, you know, they tried the Russell Westbrook, who's a former MVP on a really high paid contract, but just hasn't worked with the Lakers. He got traded to Utah, and they've brought in a whole bunch of role players to fit around LeBron and Anthony Davis to... I don't think it'll make him championship, but it'll make him better. I think it's a better combination. Better. So the two teams that made lots of moves were the Nets and the Lakers. And then Phoenix have obviously gone big buying into Kevin Durant, and Mavs went big buying into Kyrie. So I'll have to see how all that plays out.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's exciting. You know, it creates interest. That's
yeah,
for sure.
It really does. But, you know, the Lakers team, which will go on the court tomorrow, is completely different than the played the other day when LeBron got the record. They're just not even the same team. So it's kind of weird as a supporter, your team can change within 3 days, be a totally different team. You know, you can have five, six, seven different players.
Hard to be loyal, isn't it?
Yes.
Sports like that. And the EPL's the same. Like, I remember, you know, years ago, 20 years ago, was it Saha? Like, you know, promising striker playing for Fulham. So he runs around on a Wednesday for Fulham.
Yep.
And Man U say, right, he's our man, and he runs out for Man U on the Saturday.
Absolutely. And that's what it's been like. The positive for a couple of Australians, I think it'll really – Paddy Mills is still in Brooklyn. I think his minutes will skyrocket now in the structure. I think he'll get back in the rotation and play really good minutes. And the other Australian, Matisse Thybulle, who was playing for Philadelphia, got traded to Portland, and he was – played really well for us at the Olympics. He's kind of a bizarre story, born to a American father who was working in Sydney and lived the first 6 years of his life in Sydney on the Northern Beaches, and has dual citizenship, and ended up representing Australia at the Olympics last year in Japan and did really well. He's now been traded to Portland, and I think that will really increase his minutes and he'll be really effective there. So that was probably a good move, good trade for him as well. Josh Green, the young Australian playing in Dallas, he's hit the starting five and performing really well. So he's another young up-and-comer. So between him and Josh Giddey, we've got some really good youngsters. And Dyson Daniels playing for the Pelicans, who's injured at the moment. We've got some really, really good young Australians performing at an elite level at the moment, really boding well for the Paris and Los Angeles Olympics going forward.
Yeah, they're very promising, isn't it?
Yeah, basketball in Australia, men's and women's, but men's at the moment, it's looking really strong for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years.
Oh, it's salivating.
Yeah, it really is. So,
you know, what they could achieve potentially, it's very, very, very promising. And, you know, if we get our crystal ball out, hopefully good things ahead.
Well, hopefully they can all make themselves available with injury and those sort of things in the off season. I know Giddey has said he will definitely be available. Dyson Daniels said he will definitely be available. Josh Green already played for Australia at the Olympics, so that's a good sign. Ben Simmons is the big question mark, and he's having as someone said on a different podcast again, you know, the worst contract in the NBA at the moment is Ben Simmons for what he's getting paid to what he's producing. It's been a disaster, but, you know, I think he's still coming. He's got mental health. He's still coming back from a physical back injury. I'm hoping, still fingers crossed, he'll get there, but it hasn't looked good, to be honest.
No, it's been very disappointing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we won't get into it. You could talk about, you know, players with too much too soon and, you know, big raps.
Absolutely.
All that sort of thing. But, yeah, hopefully he gets himself sorted.
But, look, the NBA over the next week or two, as the team settle back in, will be really interesting, and we'll certainly give some, as we go into All-Star break, which is nearly halfway, and then the back half of the season when things get serious, well, I'll certainly do a regular weekly update on the NBA.
Look forward to it. Now, just happening this weekend, Greg, there is, of course, the Indigenous All-Stars versus the Maori.
Yes, in New Zealand. Is that right?
In New Zealand, which is good because they always play it, you know, over here.
No, I think it's great.
No, there's been some really good stories on the news about, you know, the two the cultural aspects of both sides and the traditions, and you know, two pretty strong teams. A couple of players have pulled out, but that always happens. You know, it's this time of year. It'll be a good contest.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting. It's you know, one of those very early in the season, but first formal competitions. And you know, I think representing cultures, apart from, you know, is very different to representing club or country. So I think there's still a lot of passion, although it's very early and they'll be very cautious of injuries and things like that. I think there'll be a lot of passion involved, which is a good thing.
Yeah, and it does. Okay, it is the first game, so it can be sloppy. You know, just drop balls and all the rest of it. But you're right. I think it is definitely well above a normal trial game because of that passion.
Yes. Now, it's a level. It's not a full game, but it's a level above a normal trial club trial game for sure, in my opinion.
It is with the passion there. The A-League and the NBL both soldier on.
Yes, NBL's into their finals. So Sydney and New Zealand finish 1 and 2, so they go straight into the semi-final. So they started a new qualifying series this year. So the top six, what they call the play-in game. So the top two went straight into the finals. 3 and 4 played off for the next position in the finals. 5 and 6 played off. The loser of that dropped out, and the winner plays the loser of 3 and 4. So New Zealand and Sydney went straight through to the semifinals. Tasmania and Cairns finished 3 and 4, and they played last night in Cairns, and Tasmania upset them. So Tasmania now go through to the semifinal and play New Zealand on Sunday in the first of a best of three. Cairns, who were the loser, play... So Southeast Melbourne played Perth in the elimination game last night, and Perth again upset Southeast Melbourne. So they play Cairns in Cairns on Sunday. And the winner of that, the loser gets knocked out. The winner goes on to play Sydney in the best of three semi-final. And the two best of threes then go into a best of five grand final. So we're grand really final. At the business end of the NBL.
I noticed a month or two ago, it looked like Perth were going to miss the finals.
Yeah, no. Oh, and so that, I don't know if you caught that on the weekend, but when they finish on points, equal points in the NBL, it goes to percentages, for and against. And as it turned out, Melbourne, this was last Sunday, Melbourne won their game by 11 points, which put them in sixth position. And they were absolutely equal on percentage and wins with Perth. So Perth had to win their game. Sorry, Melbourne won by 12. Perth had to win by 11. And they were playing Sydney in Perth. And now Sydney are the top of the table. Perth won by 12. They got there by 1 point. It was the most exciting end to a season I've ever seen.
Oh, goodness.
So Melbourne got knocked out, and Perth went into the playoff game and then unexpectedly beat Southeast Melbourne, so advanced. So it's, yeah, really exciting way. Kudos to the NBL for trying something new. It's really made it more exciting.
Yeah, and Perth, you can never write them off.
No.
Success in the NBL.
We talk about a benchmark before in terms of BBL with Perth. Well, Perth basketball's the same. They are the benchmark at the NBL and have been for decades.
Well done to them, keeping their season alive.
Yeah, certainly are.
Now, just before we get, Greg, is there any girls in the sporting world or other?
Not that I can think of. We've got to keep our, you know, NBL finals, women's T20 World Cup. We've got to keep our eye on that in South Africa because that kicks off very soon. Obviously, definitely, we've got the test matches going on in India. We'll keep our eye on that. WNBL, the Women's National Basketball League, is coming to an end. So I'll get up to date on that for next week and give an update on that. Okay. Unfortunately, Lauren Jackson got injured last week.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. Yep.
Yeah, really sad. Kudos to the WNBL. They played a game at John Cain Arena against Southside Flyers, which was Lauren Jackson's team, and Sydney Flames. Got the largest crowd ever. Over 7,800 people were there, which is brilliant. But, you know, Lauren Jackson hurt her Achilles within the first 2 minutes and was already playing on a broken foot, which she admitted. She had broken bones in her foot but was still playing. But she's had surgery yesterday on her ankle or a foot and her Achilles, but hasn't ruled out coming back. So, you know, hopefully she makes it. You know, the comeback's not over yet because it's been a real fairy tale.
I know, it certainly has been a fairy tale.
And more important, I hope she, you know, for Lauren, who's a, you know, talk about goats, she is the goat of Australian basketball, men's or women's. She's the goat above and beyond any other player. She is a freak of athletic nature and probably gets a lot of credit, but probably deserves more. She is the best of basketball Australia's ever produced.
Without question.
But the interest her comeback has garnered for women's basketball in general, but women's basketball and the crowds the WNBL has had in their normal season is above any season they've ever had. And I think, you know, a lot of credit to Lauren for, you know, obviously persevering, you know, the rehab she would go through every week. I think to get back on the court, it must have been phenomenal at her age. And I just can't speak highly enough of her. And then the interest that's, you know, created in the women's basketball is beyond expectation. So I hope she comes out, you know, plays, even if it's just domestic, not for Australia, but domestically, gets back on the court just to finish on her terms and not with injury.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I just feel, well, there's two things I sort of, not question, but I worry. It's been an absolute sensation of what she's done, but there's nothing sadder too than seeing a champion, you know, go out lame.
Yep.
Or go
so
out
true.
Like Graham Langland style.
Yes.
I know that it was his last game, but that sort of thing. And my question is, you're totally right, Greg, and all the, you know, the gunning, all the excitement and the what it did for Australian women's basketball. But I guess the administrators now need to say, right, this is not going to last much longer. How do we continue this success?
You are so right. How do we ride the wave? Lauren Jackson, whether it's this year, next year, she's got to finish. But how do you maintain the enthusiasm? And you know, it's for those peripheral people like you that aren't basketball fanatics but got involved and know about it and aware of it. How do you maintain that awareness?
That's right. Because unfortunately, it's like, yeah, you can only go to the well so many times.
That's right. Yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I hope they work it out because there's a fantastic product there, a world-class product. The Australian women's team is third in the world. You know, we watched them play. They played brilliantly, performed at a really high level. We've got players getting drafted and traded and signed to free agency in the WNBA right now, ready for the next season. I think we've got 6 or 7 players already signed to play in the WNBA. So the team performs at a really high level.
Oh, for sure. So, yeah, hopefully the administrators can get on board and, you know, get their marketing people together and get a plan, get a strategy.
Continue to ride the wave because it's heading in the right direction.
Indeed. Okay, Greg. I think that's all from me.
I think that's it for our first one back for 2023.
I think it's done great. Pretty well.
Great to be back.
Great to be back. Look, and we will be doing some more bit of history and deep dives and a few other interesting things. I've got a few potential guests hopefully lined up.
Good to hear.
Have a chat about things sport and, you know, some other things as well. So, yeah, just welcome back, everyone. Thanks for listening once again. And we look forward to your company throughout the course of the year. But as we all know, too much sport is never enough.
Well said. And what a way to finish. Thanks, Gray. It's good to be back. And we will check in again with our wrap next week.
We'll see you then, Greg. Hey, everyone. Bye for now.
Thanks all.